5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Wendy Bell. Inspiring solutions to save America. One show at a time. Are you ready to get on board?
They believe that they can destroy this bond that exists between you and Trump if they somehow make Trump look bad, make Trump look like a reprobate, embarrass you about Trump. They can't do it because you came before Trump. Desperately want Trump gone, and I know that they desperately want it codified that Trump cannot run again, because make no mistake, they remain scared to death of you, and they remain scared to death of Trump. Trump, 75 million, 80 million votes. And I'm going to tell you, you're not going anywhere. Even if Trump does, you're not. Which I think remains one of our big campaign strengths going forward. They can't separate you from Trump. And more importantly, they can't separate you from the ideas. They can't separate you from MAGA. They can't separate you from Make America Great Again.
From sea to shining sea, 3 hours of bold truth and excellence. The Wendy Bell Radio Program.
Welcome back. Hour number two of the Wendy Bell Radio Program. Delighted, as always, to welcome you to the show. We've got a great interview coming up in the second segment of this hour. We're going to be talking from prison in Cumberland, Maryland, the federal lockup, with Oath Keepers founder Stuart Rhodes. And it's an important conversation because I don't think you've ever really been told from the founder of the group himself what they're all about. And what they are not. And you are going to hear that. And it's important. So that's just about a half hour away. This headline, this whole story, this ridiculous fake justice, the knives that have been out for Donald Trump, it's so disappointing. When you look at it and step away and you realize how many people have to be corrupted, conned, bribed, blackmailed, down with this fraud for Donald Trump to be in these court cases right now. And the conflicts of interest, truly, truly breathtaking. All right? So you've got this hush money case, which is not even a case. It was Michael Cohen, unbeknownst to Donald Trump, if the court documents that I've seen are accurate, deciding as one of Donald Trump's lawyers at the time to pay off this porn star, Stormy Daniels, who alleged to have some sort of sexual relationship with Donald Trump. It is a relationship Donald Trump has denied repeatedly. However, as anybody who is powerful, who has deep pockets, realizes, there are people who come out of the woodwork and will say and do anything to cash in on a payday. It's gross. And those of us who would never think about doing it are mystified. But it happened. So what do we know subsequent to this case, this indictment, and these criminal charges saying that Trump had to alter some financial documents in some kind of a cover-up before the 2016 election to pay off this porn star and say, shh, don't talk about it? Well, all of the predicate is garbage, right? The judge in this case could not be more conflicted if he tried. Period. So what do we just find out? This is a story in the Epic Times broke today. Wife of judge in Trump hush money trial worked for AG Letitia James. So you're going to have four different DAs persecuting and prosecuting Donald Trump for a whole menagerie of things. One of whom is George Soros funded, the woman who campaigned on destroying Donald Trump. That was her mission. It wasn't to take care of crime and law and order in New York. It wasn't about anything like that. It was about pulverizing, destroying, and giddily, gleefully campaigning on her derangement over Donald Trump. And the wife of the judge overseeing this case worked for this woman? Do you not think that might be a bing, 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 bing? I'm no constitutional expert. I'm just going to go here. My rudimentary skills of court cases would tell me that looks really bad. Records show that the wife of the judge presiding over President Trump's criminal trial in Manhattan once worked for AG Letitia James, sparking claims of bias. You think? I'm going to go with yeah. Laura Merchan, the wife of the judge presiding over former President Donald Trump's hush money case in Manhattan, once worked for New York Attorney General Letitia James, who brought the massive $350 million civil fraud case against the former president, with the revelation reviving claims of bias and calls for the judge's recusal. This judge repeatedly has gagged Donald Trump's ability to ask for a new judge, to present evidence to the American people that there is a monster conflict of interest. And this is just the new part, because of course we've been talking about Judge Merchan's daughter. Records interviewed by the Epoch Times show Ms. Merchan, this is the wife of the judge, worked for 21 years as a special assistant to the AG in New York, including 3 years under Letitia James. She changed jobs over 2 years ago. Huh. Such weird timing, isn't it? So strange. Ms. James is a Democrat who fixated on President Trump as she campaigned for New York Attorney General, calling him a con man and vowing to shine a, quote, bright light into every dark corner of his real estate dealings. Well, she began investigating the former president soon after taking office, which is so weird. That's like around the time that this judge's wife switched jobs. It's almost like they had an end game and we're going to work backwards, right? Judge Juan Merchan is presiding over a separate criminal trial involving President Trump in New York, in which the former president is accused of falsifying business records in order to conceal a $130,000 hush money payoff to an adult performer to stay quiet about their alleged affair. Trump on Truth Social accused Judge Merchan of bias and corruption while labeling the case against him election interference and also demanding the judge's recusal. How did that get responded to? Shut up. You're not allowed to talk. Really? Now, this Merchan, this judge, imposed the gag order on President Trump in the case and on April 1st expanded it. So on Monday, expanded the gag order to include family members of the judge. Wait a minute. Donald Trump has evidence of a conflict of interest, and he wants people to know about the conflict of interest that the judge and the left don't want you to know about. So the judge, who's being accused of his conflict of interest, which clearly he has, instead of addressing said conflict, slaps a muzzle on Donald Trump and says, "And thou shalt not talk about my family." But it's your family that's the conflict. Oh, you guys see it? Of course you do. The judge wrote in the order that President Trump's speech, quote, injects fear in those assigned or called to participate in the proceedings, that not only they, but their family members as well, are fair game for the defendant's vitriol. First of all, I don't know anybody out there who's conservative who would take the time to letter write or fear monger to a judge or his family. So that's bogus. That's the smokescreen. This judge is so conflicted. And I'll just remind you, if it's not enough that his wife it has been working with the Attorney General's office for 2 decades, it's it's probably worth noting again that the Democrat clients of that Judge Merchant's daughter raised $93 million off of this hush money trial. How is that possible, you say? Two major Democratic clients of the daughter of the judge overseeing Trump's hush money trial have raised at least $93 million in campaign donations. And they've used the case in their solicitation emails, raising renewed concerns that the jurist has a major conflict of interest. So wait a minute. Donald Trump, when he finds out all this stuff, isn't allowed to talk about it, but the Democrats are allowed to fundraise off of this case. They're allowed to go to every single media outlet they wish. They get to be on the evening news, hook, line, and sinker any day of the week. And Donald Trump can't talk about it. Does that mean anything to you guys? That's a threat to democracy. That is election interference incarnate. That is everything that the left says Republicans want to accomplish in 2024. They've already done it. They've already done it. When we come back, I want to talk about this $93 million a little bit more deeply. Because not only are they allowed to muzzle a political candidate, they get to get rich off of prosecuting him. Oh boy, next on the Wendy Bell Radio program. So it's one of those stories that involves and demands attention. It's not good enough to be bribed or blackmailed or to be compromised in any way after taking an oath. I don't care if you're a doctor. I don't care if you're a juror. I don't care if you're taking a vow in marriage. There is supposed to be a sanctity. And that's not old-fashioned. I'm not prude to think that. I'm not idealistic. There is right and there is wrong. There is north. And if your compass points north, it's not complicated. This is the direction I want to walk. I believe in this. But the number of people we're seeing who I believe are so woefully corrupted, whose decisions have the ability to impact thousands of people's lives. I mean, millions if you think about it. I mean, this judge whose daughter, just take away that his wife for 20 years worked for the Attorney General's office, and that he's a judge, and that the Attorney General is his wife's boss. And that everybody is so uber, uber political. And then let's just talk about the daughter, okay? This woman, she's 34 years old. She's not a child. She's the judge's adult daughter. An adult daughter who's been identified by some hack left court-ish judge attorney publication as like an up-and-comer in the field of like election law and campaigns and whatnot. No. The judge's daughter, Lauren Merchant, the president of Authentic Campaigns, a Chicago-based progressive political consulting firm whose top clients include Adam Schiff, who gave them $14 million while he was going after Donald Trump in the first impeachment. All of this has been so planned. And I feel so naively stupid that I'm just now standing at the dining room table looking at the puzzle picture, right? The pieces. And I'm just like, wait a minute. I've got your Lauren Merchum over there and Authentic Campaigns. You over here, you're working on Adam Schiff and impeachment, and we're seeing the connection. Where my puzzle pieces over here connect with yours, and it's all one giant. Ew. Authentic Campaigns, and thus the judge's daughter, actively making money from this sham attack against President Trump, rendering Judge Merchan conflicted out, one of Trump's spokespeople said, adding that the evidence of bias is even clearer now than it was in August when Merchan rejected Trump's first recusal motion. Wouldn't you think if somebody in the case finds out that there's a connection that could put into jeopardy the outcome of said trial, which we all know they take years, are we going to waste millions and millions of dollars and endless hours of time and jury and all of this if we can tell you from moment number one that you shouldn't be the guy hearing this? This judge feels like he's got enough backing and cover to have the audacity to stay put. Ew! $93 million candidates connected to Judge Merchan's daughter's business. They were able to make and fundraise off of the case that this judge is overseeing. Is there nobody left with any ethics in the realm of justice? Of course not. And yet, curiously, coming up towards the end of the program, an absolute ridiculous story of pro-life, I guess you'd say, not protesters, but activists, believing what they believe in, being arrested, found guilty, and now potentially sentenced to as much as a year in prison for speaking to women getting an abortion and asking them to rethink. This is not the United States of America. These are the United States of freaking bad crab crazy. And I'm pretty sure it's underscored by one man's voice that you will hear in a matter of moments on the other end of a phone connected through the Cumberland Federal Penitentiary, where the man who has been sentenced to 18 years in lockup, who spent more than a year of his life in solitary confinement, the leader, the founder of the Oath Keepers, Stuart Rhodes, from his mouth, what really is going on. Do not miss this. Next on the Wendy Bell Radio Network. Welcome back to the Wendy Bell Radio program. Right now, I want to play for you an interview we did right after yesterday's show. I got a call from the Federal Penitentiary in Cumberland, Maryland. On the other side of the line was Stuart Rhodes, the founder of the Oath Keepers. You need to know what the media have not told you, and you need to hear it from Stuart's mouth. Stuart Rhodes, how the heck are you, sir?
I'm doing fine, all considered. Doing okay. How are you?
You know, I'm doing just fine. And I want to quickly, before we even get started, how did we connect? How did you find out about this program?
I've been listening to your show. All the guys here at the Cumberland FCI listen to you at night. And that's where I first heard you, too. So you'd be surprised how many guys here listen to your show every night. Black, white, city guys, country boys, just across the spectrum.
You know, I'm so grateful to hear your voice. You're such a misunderstood individual, I think, because you, as the founder of the Oath Keepers, you've been dragged through so much mud, Stuart Rhodes.
It's not a misunderstanding. It's a intentional demonization campaign from the very beginning. Yes.
Tell me about Oath Keepers. Tell me what this organization is about, who you guys are, what you were doing on January 6th, because I don't think anybody really knows.
Well, I mean, a lot of folks among the Trump supporters know. We were throughout the entire Trump administration, we were in the streets protecting Trump supporters, including outside of all the Trump campaign rallies. Because Antifa likes to attack people when they've gone through Secret Service. They know they've gone through that screening. They can't carry anything, even a ballpoint pen. And so when they come out, they know they're vulnerable to being attacked. Antifa likes to attack, you know, senior citizens and disabled veterans, and they hit you with bike locks and things like that. So we would wait outside the Trump campaign events, and we would have armed escorts waiting to escort the vulnerable back to their cars. And so a lot of folks do know who we are from that. And that's what we're doing on January the 6th. So we were there, again, to do security for two permitted events right outside the Capitol, right around the Capitol. And we've been there in November and December for the big Stop the Steal rallies in D.C. So that's we've been doing that for the entire time, you know, we've been around. And Oath Keepers is an association of both current serving and former military police, firefighters, EMS. I was a paratrooper in the Army, and I was also a firefighter. So all of us who swore an oath to defend the Constitution, it's all about keeping that oath. That's what we are. But we've done quite a bit of volunteer security and also disaster relief. I believe it was 14 hurricane relief missions, too. So we always have built-in security where we go anywhere. So we're able to go into places that other relief agencies are afraid to go to. Any rough neighborhoods that are gang dominated, we go in there and they don't give us any hassle. They know we're there to help people too. So, but on January the 6th, we were there to do two permitted events, security for two permitted events on Capitol grounds. One for Latinos for Trump, and the other one for Ali Alexander's event right outside the Capitol doors.
When did you know that things were going sideways and it wasn't what it was supposed to be on January 6th at the Capitol?
Well, I mean, this is an important point to make, is that Trump supporters, because of the history of Antifa attacking them in the streets, that's why so many of them were wearing helmets and goggles and knee pads and body armor, because Antifa likes to stab people. They just stabbed some people in D.C. in December. And they like to hit people in the head with bricks. And so, of course, they were going to protect themselves to whatever degree they could. And like with the Trump rallies, when folks were asked to go through Secret Service screening to get onto the, you know, into the Ellipse rally, a lot of them didn't want to do that because they don't want to lose their helmet or their body armor or their hard-knuckle gloves or all the things that they, you know, they've gone through great pain to stay within the law, but also have the ability to defend themselves. That's what they were actually, you know, quote-unquote armed with, were things that were meant to protect them against Antifa. So all this hyperbole you see and all this breathless, you know, nonsense about, you know, Trump supporters came armed to the Capitol and they refused to go through Secret Service because they didn't want to give up their weapons. That's stuff that they were going to carry on them for defense against Antifa. And that's why we were there. And that's why the Proud Boys were there. So if it should have gone the same way the other ones went, November and December. So what I think happened is that the powers that be, you know, the CIA, FBI, DHS, and trust me, I'll be proven correct, I think the CIA was involved in this. I think that they steered and manipulated the crowd to make sure they got into the Capitol, made sure that there was violence between the protesters and the police by having police officers who work for them directly violate the rights of people using excessive force.
This call is from a federal prison.
Think happened. So a very legitimate event, real people, real protest, was manipulated and then used for propaganda purposes. That's what I think happened.
What are you accused of doing?
Oh, I was accused of seditious conspiracy, but it's important for people to know that that's a pre-baked, predetermined narrative that started right after January 6th. Out of the you know, next day, I think it was, the media was focusing on Oath Keepers and Proud Boys, saying that we led this insurrection, you know, quote-unquote insurrection. And the Oath Keepers who did go inside the Capitol, two of our teams kind of blundered in along with everybody else. They went in 20 minutes after Congress had already recessed and long after others had already entered the Capitol. And they walked in through doors already opened by other people. They didn't lead anything. But the narrative, and this is the big tell. Benny Thompson, who wound up chairing the January 6th Select Committee, member of Congress, he filed a lawsuit on February the 16th, 2021, just weeks after January the 6th, against President Trump, Rudy Giuliani, Oath Keepers, and Proud Boys, alleging a conspiracy among us, with Trump as the kingpin, to attack democracy. That's and disenfranchise black voters. That was the narrative from the beginning, was to pump this up into being an insurrection, attach it to Proud Boys and Oath Keepers as the two scary groups that the left already hates, and then tie that to President Trump and allege a conspiracy between us all. So that's the narrative. And everything they've done ever since, all these show trials, all these coerced false confessions and coerced false testimony, have been to make that false narrative, you know, the truth, quote unquote.
There is a very despicable bribery blackmail apparatus that underpins everything in the Beltway. Is that, do you get that vibe?
Oh yeah, absolutely. That's you know, I wrote a series of open letters to President Trump and along with Kelly Sorrell, my co-author, calling on him to, we said, look, the deep state, the swamp water is the secrets. It's the secrets that they use both control and to protect the deep state, people that participate. And so I wanted him to use his absolute power as president to declassify anything, to go and seize the files in the FBI, CIA, NSA, et cetera, and declassify all the secrets. Because that's what they do. They blackmail people or they bribe them, and then they have all the dirt on them, and they keep it secret. It's, you know, classified as secret, no one can disclose it, and that's how they protect them while they also control them. So he could have used his power as president to declassify, and still could if he gets back in, declassify it all and expose it. They can't stop him. As commander-in-chief, he can do that. He has absolute authority. That's the best way to take down the deep state. You know, toss all the skeletons out of the closet, show who has been bribed by the CCP, which, you know, of course, includes the Biden family, but not just them. Who has been bribed by other foreign agencies, who have been caught, you know, doing drugs or having sex with underage people, you know, things like that. Just that they're being controlled through those mechanisms. And all of the, you know, the Five Eyes and all the intelligence agencies around the world do this all the time. They blackmail people all the time.
How?
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to ask. I was going to say, how have you been treated? Like, you're not a dumb guy. You have a law degree from Yale. You were a criminal defense attorney. Yes. You served in the military. You were injured.
Right.
You were disabled in the military. Yes.
Yes. I had a parachuting accident. I've got a spinal fusion. Yes.
And so how are you treated in all of this? I mean, how long have you been behind bars?
You mean, they arrested me on January 13, 2022. It took them a year to coerce fake confessions and false testimony from other oath keepers. They threatened them with life in prison, and some of them, you know, were military veterans who had PTSD. And so, you know, I understand why they did that, but they were coerced into fake confessions. So they stacked up fake evidence against us and put us in front of a D.C. jury. It took them a year to do that. But then once I was arrested, I was in solitary confinement from there on. I was in solitary confinement for over a year. So all pretrial, and I've, you know, my criminal history is traffic tickets. So they denied me pretrial release on the basis of somehow being in danger of the community, even though I've been already out for a year after January 6th with no problems, of course, and had no prior criminal history. But they went ahead and put me in isolation anyway. So it's been a year in solitary confinement. All during my trials in solitary confinement, then afterwards in the D.C. jail in solitary confinement. So, but. Now I'm okay. This is a decent facility. I'm in a medium facility here, and the staff here is very professional and respectful. So I'm doing fine.
How long are you supposed to be serving your sentence?
18 years. Yeah. So, you know, I said at my sentencing, I started out by saying, I'm a political prisoner. Like President Trump, my only so-called crime is opposing those who are destroying our country. And that ticked off, that ticked off Judge Mehta. Pretty good. So he hammered me with 18 years and basically said my free speech is too dangerous to have in our society. That's what he said. He said you're smart, you're charismatic and a compelling figure, and that's what makes you dangerous. So I'm here for my free speech. They don't like my political speech, and also to use, like I said, to pump up January the 6th into something it was not. That's the most ridiculous insurrection in world history, most pathetic insurrection in world history. That's because it wasn't an insurrection, it was a protest.
Who the hell is Ray Epps?
Well, he was our Arizona chapter president until, I believe, 2012.
Whoa, wait. What did you just say? He was what?
He was the Arizona state chapter president for Oath Keepers early on when we first started up, like 2011 and 12. And then he resigned because he said his family business was just too much for him to to be able to give time to the organization. So he left. And we didn't see him or hear from him again until we saw the video that everybody else saw of him on the night of January the 5th in D.C. telling a crowd in the streets that, you know, tomorrow we must go into the Capitol. He was yelling that to the crowd. That's where we saw him again for the first time in all those years.
This call is from a federal prison.
I had no idea that he was an Oath Keeper.
Yeah. Well, that's what's bizarre about what's going on with him. You would think that the J6 Select Committee would love to parade that fact all over the place. Say, look at this. Here's an Oath Keeper leader, you know, telling people to go. Here's a smoking gun of a plan to go into the Capitol. But they didn't. They erased him. You know, he was just disappeared from all their footage. Lance Samsel is shown pushing over the first bike rack around the perimeter of the Capitol. But what they cut out was Ray Epps whispering in Ryan's ear right before he did it. That's cut out. That's gone. So it's just really strange and Orwellian the way that Ray Epps has been shielded and protected. And in our trial, we were not allowed to show that footage or show footage of Ray Epps walking around in the crowd outside the Capitol and telling people to go towards the Capitol. We weren't allowed to even mention his name at trial.
You know, before we run out of time, because I know when you're calling from a federal prison, you have limited minutes.
Yeah.
I want to know, what do you want us to know? Use your last minute here.
Well,
I think
people need to understand that we were correct, that Trump is correct, that the election was stolen. And not only was it stolen, it was unconstitutional and illegal. It violated state election laws. And that triggered a violation of Article 2 of the Constitution, which gives the legislature alone the power to determine the manner for selecting electors. That wasn't done. In many of the swing states, or most of the swing states, they just did it through executive fiat or through judges. That made it unconstitutional. So President Trump has been correct, and to his credit, has not backed down on that. So we were right. That was a stolen election. That was a coup. I call it the COVID coup of 2020. And we need to just keep talking about the fact that it was a coup. You know, the emperor has no clothes. Biden's not duly and lawfully elected. And so we need to understand that and need to be willing to, you know, be very, very, very strident watchdogs this next election. And hopefully President Trump can get back in and undo all the damage. That's what we hope.
Amen. Amen. You stay strong, Stuart Rhodes. It is an honor and a privilege to talk to you. And you get back in touch with me because we can chat frequently. Perfect timing. I lost him. Stuart Rhodes, ladies and gentlemen, the founder of the Oath Keepers.
That's what it's like to talk to somebody in a federal lockup. Once the time's out, it's out. Lights out. What'd you think about that, friends? Quick timeout. We'll be back to discuss next on the Wendy Bell Radio program.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. We just listened to the interview we recorded yesterday after the show with Oath Keepers founder Stuart Rhodes. It's about the fourth time I've spoken with Stuart. And I think what I wanted more than anything is to allow you to hear from him what was going on that day, who the Oath Keepers are. It's so idiotic to try to create this narrative that people who take an oath, oath keepers, keepers of the Constitution, the defenders, the protectors, the eyes out there watching. It's very comforting to me. Is it not to you to know that there are men out there, whether they be in law enforcement or the military, or they were firefighters, that they were first responders, and their service, once perhaps in active duty, now is done, their service to us is not. And so they go places to offer that defense. And they had to be twisted up in this. Ladies and gentlemen, it was a setup. It was a setup. It was a cover-up. They knew we knew 2020 was fraudulent. They needed the ultimate smokescreen, and people like Stuart Rhodes and Enrique Tarrio and Jake Lang. And for a long time, 40-odd months, Jacob Chansley, whose greatest offense was doing what? Getting escorted through the Capitol? by 9 police officers. What did he do? He said a prayer. He said a prayer of thanksgiving. You can't make it up. You can't take a pure group of objectives, this basic love of country, this belief in the Constitution. And you can't lie more egregiously about people than they did. And to use something called seditious conspiracy, which they concocted to go after Donald Trump, to go back to like Civil War times, and to try to use something from the 1860s to use against Donald Trump. Because all they are is scared. Scared of you knowing the truth. Scared of you seeing with your own eyes. Scared of you hearing their voices. This is why no judge has heard a freaking election case. Because if they did, they could not say they've seen no evidence of fraud. Fraud is freaking everywhere. It's in 147,000 ballots that had no creases, except they were mailed. Got it. It's so preposterous. It's so outrageous. It's so unbelievable. And that's why the panic is real. There's that binder, friends. 10 inches thick. Is that what it is? Stuart Rhodes makes mention of it. He said the secrets are the swamp water. That in order to play, you've got to be blackmailed. Is this why 101 House Republicans voted against the wishes of millions and millions of Republican voters and went down with this stupid spending package? Because everyone has a price. And the hand on the Bible is bull. It's for show. It's a game. But it's not a game to the Oath Keepers. It's not a game to Donald Trump. It's not a game to the voices out there who allow you to join me at the dining room table and stand around the puzzle. And not just look at it, but to choose a section. Which area do you want to own? And then dig and hunt and educate and share and spread it and own it and be part of the solution. They're not afraid of Donald Trump. They're afraid of you. Quick timeout. Hour number 3 of the Wendy Bell Radio program is upon us, my friends. It's the moment when a movement goes way too far. And I've got it for you next.